Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition for Saturday, February 28th, and Sunday, March 1st. It's already March, everybody. I can't believe it. We've almost survived winter. We're going to start on the front page with our local news and the things that are the most important. We'll move on through other local announcements. We'll take a peek at what's going on around our state if there's anything to report. We'll take a look at, we'll take a break. I mean, at the midpoint, and we'll look at the obituaries that came into the newspaper by Friday at 5 p.m., and we'll turn our attention as we wrap up our time together to sports. So let's start with the front page with this headline: State Champion Salt Fork FFA wins Beef Expo Livestock Judging Contest. And this is a staff report. The Salt Fork FFA Livestock Judging Team made history this weekend at the State Beef Expo Livestock Judging Contest, competing against 108 teams and 348 contestants from across the state. Leading the way was Lucy DeAth, who placed second overall individual in the entire contest. An incredible accomplishment in such a competitive field, according to Salt Fork FFA advisor Stacy Rickard. As a team, Salt Fork rose to the top, earning the title of overall state champions. This victory marks a monumental achievement for the chapter, as it has been since the 1970s that Salt Fork last won a state livestock judging contest. The team evaluated multiple classes of cattle, placing animals based on structure, muscle, balance, and overall market and breeding quality. Rickard credited the team's strong work ethic, countless hours of practice, and commitment to excellence paid off in a big way. This win is more than just a banner. It's a testament to the dedication of these students and the tradition of excellence within Salt Fork FFA, said Rickard in a release. Bringing home a state title after decades makes this moment even more special to our chapter and community. Congratulations to Lucy DeAth and the entire Salt Fork FFA Livestock Judging Team on an unforgettable accomplishment. Team members are Anna McCollum, Vivian Hunter, Lily DeAth, and Isaac Bemis. Continuing with local news and education as well, D118 approves the superintendent's contract, and this comes to us from reporter Chrissy Jankowski. Dateline Danville. The official contract for District 118 Superintendent John Hart was approved Wednesday night for 2 years at a salary of $208,000. The contract started in July 2025 and runs through June of 2027. John Hart, who was originally an assistant superintendent, became the interim superintendent last spring after a board shakeup and settlement with the previous superintendent, Dr. Alicia Geddes. Geddes was placed on administrative leave after her absence from board meetings for months due to concerns of threats. Board President Darlene Halloran emphasized several times in the meeting that the board is committed to transparency. He has our total support. He's done a good job, Halloran said before the vote. It's taken us a while to get there, through no fault of anybody other than just trying to get it right. She continued, I tell you again, community, administrators and staff, that we are committed to transparency. We want very much for all of you to understand exactly what the superintendent does and what he does for us as a board. We couldn't be more pleased with what he does. This contract will be posted in a light of transparency Thursday so that you all can see exactly what is in his contract, along with four goals that he's established for himself. Board member Christopher Easton highlighted, the contract is fair. I'm excited for the public statement, Easton said. You can look up Champaign Unit 4 and Urbana District 116, and you'll see 36% lower cost from Champaign and within 5% of what the Urbana superintendent is making. Dr. Giovanni Ponce, Champaign superintendent, hired in July of 2025, is paid an annual salary of $375,000, according to a report by the Champaigna Today. Urbana almost spends exactly the same amount of money as Danville District 118, Easton said, so I think it's very fair and comparable to other districts, though some people, when they see large numbers, they sometimes get scared. I think it's important to keep it in context, to keep good people. This is the price that it is, and Mr. Hart's worth it, in my opinion. That's all for me. Urbana Superintendent Dr. Jennifer Ivory Tatum has a salary of $228,000. Hart has been serving as the superintendent for District 118 for almost a year. Would you start getting to work, please? Halloran joked and then added, We really do appreciate the work that Mr. Hart puts in. He puts in long days and his heart's in the right place. He's in the buildings. Our staff knows him well, and we appreciate the job you do very much. The contract is available for public viewing on the District 118 website. Continuing with front page local news, candidate forum set for Palmer, again by reporter Christy Jankowski. Election season's in full swing, with less than a month until the general primary election in Illinois, and two key races in Vermilion County on March 17th will be treasurer and sheriff. The Vermilion County Sheriff, Pat Hartshorn, will be retiring, leaving an open spot in the ballot box. Mike Hartshorn, Hugh Sands, and John Thompson are all running for the coveted spot. However, Sands is running unopposed for the Democrat spot in November's general election, leaving only Hartshorn and Thompson to contend for the Republican ticket. The current Vermilion County Treasurer, Darren Duncan, is running against Jason Whaling for the Republican nomination. There are no Democrats running for that seat. Jacob Daisy, a local salon owner and community member, is hosting a public forum at 6 p.m. on Thursday, March 5th at the David S. Palmer Arena, showcasing each candidate. I will have each candidate kind of up on a platform in the conference room at the David S. Palmer Arena, Daisy said. So there will be questions that I'm gathering from certain data and everything from Vermilion County statistics, but I will also be releasing a link for the public to ask questions that I will go through, of course. No questions that will be defaming candidates or personal attacks or anything like that. Those will be excluded, but I will have questions that are coming from the public. Daisy emphasized that this event is not a debate. They won't know which exact questions they will be getting because there will be some questions that will be asked for all three of them, sheriff candidates, to answer, but a majority of the questions will just be individual, Daisy said. They won't be able to also rebut each other because I don't want to lead a debate. It's strictly a question and answer for the voter, taxpayers, and community. Daisy hosted a forum earlier this year for the Illinois governor hopeful Darren Bailey. He said he expects this event will go pretty similarly with more people involved. The candidates are excited to do this, Daisy said. I'm getting a lot of feedback from the community on it because I think, you know, the sheriff's race is very important in our county. I mean, we've had the same sheriff for 30 years now. Daisy added that this will be an opportunity to really hear what the candidates have to offer before the primary. The biggest thing for me is the department has a pretty large budget, Daisy said. I know they both have been in law enforcement and one is already on the department, but coming in and managing that budget is, you know, a pretty responsible thing to handle. As for what kind of questions to expect, Daisy said he anticipates the main questions focusing on the future plans, including how to modernize the department. Daisy said he thinks addressing mental health issues is part of the job as well. I think a lot of people are focused on mental health issues around our community as well, not just with Danville, but Vermilion County as a whole. We do have a significant homeless population, Daisy said. I think that is a big initiative that needs to be addressed from the sheriff's candidates in this forum. The commercial news received statements from each candidate about the upcoming forum. Hartshorn said, I think Jacob Daisy's efforts in organizing this important community event, or I appreciate Jacob Daisy's efforts in organizing this important community event. I look forward to engaging with the voters and answering their questions. Sands said, I'm looking forward to speaking to the citizens, hearing their concerns, and letting the public know who I am and what kind of sheriff I will be if they choose to elect me. Thompson said, I would like to thank the sponsors for putting together and promoting the Vermilion County Q&A Candidate Forum. This is truly a great way to allow the public to have their questions asked and answered. Whaling said, when elected, my priorities will be clear. First, responsible stewardship of taxpayer dollars. Every dollar collected belongs to the people of Vermilion County, not the government. Second, transparency and communication. Taxpayers should be able to understand how their money is managed without having to dig for answers. And third, efficiency and professionalism. Duncan said, I'm eagerly looking forward to the candidate forum on March 5th to discuss my proven record as Vermilion County's treasurer. As we look at continued local news, there's more about schools. And here is our next headline, Rural School Changes, SEA 1, changes the playing field dramatically, says school superintendent. This comes to us from Indiana News, Sue Laughlin. Declining enrollment and the loss of property tax revenue due to Senate-enrolled Act 1 has led to some tough decisions at Southwest Park Community School Corp. On February 10th, the school board voted 5-0 to close Montezuma Elementary, effective at the end of the school year. For 26-27, Montezuma students grades K through 4 will go to the only other elementary school in the district, Rosedale. In addition, Montezuma and Rosedale students in grades 5 and 6 will both go to the Riverton Park Junior Senior High campus, which will evolve to a combined middle school and high school. Long term, the district may consolidate all students on the Riverton Park campus, which would require some type of expansion. The district has been closely monitoring enrollment and finances and has been aware changes are necessary. Senate Enrolled Act 1, passed last year by the Indiana General Assembly, has expedited some of those steps. "It's changing the playing field dramatically," said Superintendent Phil Harrison. "An original analysis showed the district facing a reduction of about $351,000 in property taxes over 3 years," he said. "When the district ran actual numbers for 2026, it faced a reduction in the operating fund of more than $280,000 in the first year. In addition, loss of enrollment has impacted state funding to support the education fund, which pays for costs related to teaching and instruction. We want to continue to offer students the best possible educational experience we can give them, and it's becoming more challenging because of things that are out of our control," Harrison said. Rural districts under increasing pressure. Scott Bowling, executive director of the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, says Indiana's rural school districts have been under increasing financial pressure for well over a decade. Many rural schools are losing enrollment, which means loss of state tuition support dollars. State support is based on number of students, and it represents almost 60% of the total amount of funding schools receive on average, he said. Local property taxes, which fund operations and include transportation, school maintenance, and utilities, are an important part of school funding, but represent about 30% of it. With SEA 1, not only do you have the pressure on your largest funding source, but now you have pressure on your second largest funding source, Bowling said. That loss of revenue is requiring some tough decisions. In terms of overall impacts, he emphasizes that SEA 1 really is district by district. It is hard to make sweeping generalizations, and depending on the mix of property types, residential, business, and agriculture, and services funded by property taxpayers. All school types, whether urban, suburban, or rural, are impacted by SEA 1. Growing school districts need new buildings, but SEA 1 is not providing enough money for them to do that, Bowling said. "It's a completely new way of doing property taxes in Indiana. I don't think the legislation even knows what all the impacts are going to be," he said. The Indiana Coalition for Public Education conducted a survey in Indiana school districts last year on the impact of SEA 1. Passed on part of property tax reform, SEA 1 significantly reduces the amount of funds that school corporations as well as other municipal bodies receive from local taxes. These reductions begin immediately and increase annually through 2031, according to the ICPE overview. It also states whether rural, suburban, or urban, school corporations across the state are facing an immediate crisis that is set to worsen in coming years. More than 99% of districts responding to the survey reported that they'll be negatively impacted by SEA 1. As far as rural districts, many have gotten used to state funding that doesn't keep up with rising costs in terms of the education fund, said Jim May, ICPE vice president who oversaw the survey. But with SEA 1, this was the state taking aim at the operations side, which the state doesn't fund, and limiting what school districts and municipalities could do in terms of funding through local property taxes, May said. "I don't think they were expecting that. I don't think they were expecting the immediacy of it," May said. One survey question asked districts to identify actions their school corporations are taking in response to reduced levels of funding. Among rural districts, nearly 23% have reduced teaching staff, 35% will reduce teaching staff, and another 37% are considering it. Also, 13.5% have reduced or eliminated planned facility improvements, 27.1% will do so, and 51% are considering it. In addition, 4.2% have cut costs by reducing or eliminating transportation services, 9.4% will do so, and 44.8% are considering it. Districts had an opportunity to provide comments without being named. One rural district official wrote, "We have no choice but to either pass an operating referendum or eliminate transportation. We are also riffing $1.3 million of positions at the end of the 25-26 season." The district enrollment ranged somewhere between 1,500 and 2,500 students. Another rural district with an enrollment of 500 to 999 students stated, "It's impossible to do more with less when everything else continues to increase in cost: utilities, price of new buses, curriculum materials, property casualty insurance, health insurance, salaries, etc. Not all rural school districts are alike. Christopher Lagoni, the executive director of the Indiana Small and Rural Schools Association, also emphasized that when looking at the impact of SEA 1, it's not a rural school issue, and the impact of rural districts will be different. What's important is assessed value and AV per student, he said. Some rural schools have very good assessed value per student and some don't. Some urban schools have a very good assessed value per student and some don't. If a rural school district consists primarily of farmland and small towns with no industry, they're not generating an amount on assessed value per student that's going to be able to support multiple buildings, Lagoni said. Those pressures will increase with loss of property tax dollars under SEA 1, which decreases the taxable assessed value available to school corporations through expanded deductions that phase in through 2031, according to Indiana Capital Chronicle. According to Lagoni, schools could seek referendums to generate additional property tax dollars, but most in rural areas have said no. Southwest Park is getting ahead of the curve in their cash position, Lagoni said. He anticipates that down the road there will be increased pressures for smaller rural districts to consolidate. But because of differences in assessed value with consolidation, there ends up being winners and losers, he said. If a district with a low assessed value consolidates with one that has a higher assessed value, the district with lower AV could benefit and see tax rates decrease, while the higher AV district may see its rate adversely impacted. For those districts that might want to consider consolidation, the Small and Rural Schools Association would like for the General Assembly to provide state grants to study it, Lagoni said. Ultimately, it's about local control for us. The association would also like the legislature to consider giving rural school districts the option of raising revenue through local option income taxes, which would be subject to voter approval through a referendum, Lagoni said. That option would take the pressure off farmland and homeowners. We think of rural areas, that's a more attractive option. Lots going on in the state of Indiana legislation and how it's impacting their school systems and school funding. We're a little past the midtime of our time together, but let's take a moment to honor and inform about those who have passed away recently in our communities. We have one death notice to share today: Helen Joyce Brutlegg. Helen Joyce Brutlegg, age 78 of Potomac, passed away at Carle Foundation Hospital on February 25th after a brief illness. A celebration of her life will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, March 3rd, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville at 3940 North Vermilion Street. Pastor Kevin Purdy will officiate. Entombment will be in Spring Hill Cemetery Mausoleum. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, March 2nd at the funeral home in Danville. Memorials can be made in Joyce's memory to the Rossville Church of Christ. That concludes our obituaries for today. Let's turn our attention to some local events. Lions Club hosts annual Chili Day by Christy Jankowski. Now, I know it's today when you're listening to this on Monday, so I hope you all can get out and celebrate and support this event. The annual Lions Club Chili Day returns to collect and distribute hearing aids and eyeglasses to those in need in the community. Lions Club member Keith Strimmon, a 26-year member, said about the event, "Well, I do a lot of things, but the main thing I do is cook the chili." He said he learned how to make the chili from the late former Danville Mayor Bob Jones. "Bob Jones was doing the cooking when I first started helping him, and he let me do a little more each year," Strimmon said. "And then finally, I reached a point where Bob could no longer do this, and then I took over." Strimmon said he joined the club after giving a speech there 26 years ago. "I came to the community and came in as the manager of the Social Security office here in Danville," Strimmon recalled. "I wanted to join one of the service clubs, and I was invited to join the Lions and have been with them ever since." Strimmon said he joined the club because of his ties to service with his religion. "A lot of it has to do with, if you're raised a Christian, you're linked with the commitment to service, and that's what the Lions do," he said. "That's our model. We serve. We raise money, and of course you distribute it to the places where the community needs it." And for this dinner, they are collecting used hearing aids and eyeglasses. Strimmon said this is one of the ways they help the community by providing free or low-cost supplies. "We can't afford brand new ones," he said. "We can just give them used ones, which are reconfigured for them." They are asking people to bring in used eyeglasses and hearing aids. The event will be hosted at the St. James United Methodist Church, located at 504 North Vermilion Street, Chili will be served from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. with dine-in or carry-out as options, and tickets are $8. And this year's Chili Day is Monday, March 2nd, again from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at St. James United Methodist Church. We serve the chili and, of course, crackers for that, he said, of what will be offered in the dinner. And we also serve desserts, the big one that we make, bread pudding, which is the big draw. We have cakes and cookies and pie and other things as well. And if you're interested in joining the club, so he says to talk to a member on Monday. There will be information available at the event. Sruman said if you're in need of eyeglasses or hearing aids, information will also be available at the event. The club offers used devices reconfigured to the patient's needs for either free or at a low cost. And if you can't make it to the event, he said there'll be information on their Facebook page. So again, Chili Day, Monday, March the 2nd, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., the St. James United Methodist Church, located at 504 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Continuing with local events, for those of you that are history buffs, the War Museum hosts a fireside chat on Threads of Liberty. The Vermilion County War Museum will host its fourth fireside chat, Threads of Liberty Part 2, at 1 p.m. on Saturday, March 7th. According to a release from the museum, this colorful program is a follow-up to last month's event and will focus on early American uniforms and equipment. The program will be presented by Jeremy Brady and Ron Bolzer. There will be time after the 45-minute program for questions. Museum President Larry Weatherford will host the program. The War Museum is currently closed for tours, and it's in the final stages of remodeling and changing displays. The fireside chat feels like a guided tour through the topic rather than a formal lecture, Weatherford said. This gives a relaxed and personal atmosphere with the audience listening in on a conversation and then taking part in a question and answer session. Admission to the event is free. The monthly First Saturday program celebrate America's 250th birthday and Vermilion County's 200th, and they will continue through the end of the year, according to Weatherford. Here's a few more other things that are going on around our communities. Meeting set for retired teachers. The Vermilion County Retired Teachers Association will meet at 11 a.m. on Friday, March 6th at DAC's Bremer Conference Center. All former and recent retirees are welcome to attend. Lunch will be catered by the DAC Culinary Department, and the cost is $16. The program will be presented by Sue Richter regarding the Vermilion County Bicentennial Celebration this year. Reservations are required by, we've missed the reservation deadline, but if you really want to go, call Cheryl Schroeder at 217-474-7117. There'll be a coffee talk at the Hoopston Library, Illinois Extension, and Omni 4. All will be hosting a coffee talk at the Hoopston Public Library located at 110 North 4th Street in Hoopston. This three-part series will teach participants on eating to supportive cognitive function, medication safety, national prescription, drug take-back day, and general brain health education. Sessions will be held from 10:30 to 11:30 on the first Thursday of the month from March to May. The first session, slated for March 5th, will be nutrition for brain health. Then it will be medication safety on April 2nd, and the series will conclude with brain health on May 7th. Coffee will be provided by the Hoopston Public Library. For more information, you can visit the Illinois Extension website at go.illinois.edu. The VFW is going to hold a meatball sub-dinner, the Fountain County Old Guard VFW Post 2395, located at 1212 Liberty Street in Covington, Indiana, is having a meatball sub-dinner from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Friday, March 6th. The meal includes a meatball sub, pasta salad, potato salad, and a bag of chips. Cost is $8 for veterans, $10 for the general public, and after the dinner, the Post will host a Glow Bingo event sponsored by the Covington Swim Club. And I think I told you about this last week, but just as a reminder, city yard waste stickers are now on sale. The City of Danville Public Works Yard Waste Division announces the 2026 yard waste stickers are available for purchase. The stickers are priced at $40 each, may be purchased in person or by phone with a debit or credit card. Processing fees may apply. At the City of Danville Public Works and the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building, please note that only city-approved containers displaying a valid 2026 yard waste sticker will be collected during designated toter-only collection periods. A collection schedule and brochure outlining program guidelines will be provided with each sticker purchase. I usually try to sneak in an editorial, and today's is probably one that we've all thought about and maybe even had discussions about. It's called Spring or Not to Spring. On the evening of March 7th, millions of Americans, except those in Arizona and Hawaii, will utter the phrase heard only this time of year, spring forward. March 8th marks the beginning of daylight savings time, the 34-week period first imposed nationwide during World War I as supposedly a way to save energy. All these years later, we still do, moving our clocks forward an hour before we go to bed as we complain about losing an hour of sleep, then falling back an hour as we switch back to standard time this year on November 1st. The science of switching to daylight savings time remains a bit undecided. Some say it helps save energy, although in these days of 24/7 jobs and entertainment, that's a debatable concept. Others say moving an hour of sunlight from the beginning of the day to the evening cuts down on auto accidents because drivers can see better. There are also claims that more light in the evening gives people more opportunities for outdoor activities, creating a healthier lifestyle. Again, definitive hard science supporting these claims remains elusive. One thing most of us agree on, however, is how much we dislike the spring forward day. Some of us will need a few days or more until our bodies adjust to the new schedule, making us feel as though we're suffering from wicked jet lag. We're sure to hear from more than a few politicians who promise to sponsor changes so that we stay on standard time or daylight savings time year-round. Several other countries already passed such legislation and seem to be doing just fine. The solution, if it ever comes to vote in Congress, won't be easy. Each time designation has its advantages and disadvantages. For example, sunset in Danville on June 21st, the summer solstice, will occur at 8:23 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Just across the state line in Indiana, that same sun will set at 9:16 Eastern Daylight Time. That's not bad for Illinois. Actually, but ask a Hoosier parent how easy it is to get a three-year-old to go to bed when the sun's still in the sky. If both states kept daylight savings time year-round, sunset on June 21st in Danville would be at 7:23 p.m. and at 8:16 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in Covington. The perspective flips a bit on winter. On December 21st, the winter solstice, sunlight appears in Danville at 7:09 a.m. Central Standard Time, with sunset at 4:28 p.m. So it's dark before many people leave for work. In Covington, sunrise occurs at 8:06 a.m., with the sun setting at 5:29 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If the days stay on daylight savings time all year, those times would move up an hour, so sunrise at 8:09 and sunset at 5:28 p.m. in Danville, with Covington sunrise at 9:06 and sunset at 6:29. If politicians ever get around to being serious about eliminating the need to change our clocks twice each year, the arguments are sure to continue from those advocating standard or daylight savings. Lots of numbers mean lots of confusion, especially for politicians trying to gauge what their constituents favor the most. Regardless of what time the sun rises or sets in your community, at least our body clocks would stay on an even keel all year long. That factor alone might be worth just leaving our clocks alone. Maybe a long nap on March 7th is the best idea of all. Okay, everybody, remember that. We're going to spring ahead on March 8th. We are running out of time fast. Let's just take these last few minutes in sports and congratulate Schlarman Academy senior Charles Medlin. Here's his headline, Medlin making most of second state trip. Schlarman Academy senior Charles Medlin was just happy to be at the IHSA state swimming meet last year. This year, he's not as intimidated about going to the FMC Natatorium to face off with the best in the state. This year, I know a little bit about what I'm doing, Medlin said. Last year was my first time there, and I didn't know about the process of getting into the pool, but now I've swum in this pool a couple of times, and it's just like any pool I swam in. I'm getting pretty excited about this time, and I'm going to try my best. Medlin was able to take fourth in the 50-yard freestyle prelims and will battle for the state title this weekend. He finished 10th in the 100 prelim and will participate in a swim-off today in that event. Going to state finals completes a strong senior year for Medlin. He signed a letter of intent to go to the University of Illinois Chicago, and instead of being a team of one, he was part of a team of three. Well, congratulations, and we wish you the best, Charles. Let's take a look at our weather for the week. I've got to tell you, this decidedly looks like a spring forecast. We will be Monday, some snow early in the morning with a high of 42, but rain's going to stick around Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Highs in the high 40s, low to mid 50s. On Friday, we're going to expect a shower and thunderstorm, but our high should be 67 degrees with a low of 57. I really do think we've made it. Does that mean, though, I guess, is March coming in like a lion? I don't know. I guess it depends on the storm. But at any rate, we've made it to March. You all have a very happy week. Enjoy the non-freezing weather, and I look forward to reading again with you soon. This has been Terry Burdick with a commercial news.